Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Fiction File Podcast, where we explore the wide world of narrative entertainment, from movies to literature and everything in between. My name is Jason Boyd. I'm the editor of Fiction File, and I'm joined remotely today by managing editor Corrine Asbell. Hey, Corrine.
Hey, guys.
Hey, so also somewhere we have, as always, associate editor Dalton McKay. Good day to you, Dalton.
And good day to you.
All right, awesome, cool. So, today, we will be poring over a single work of fiction. After we introduce this work of art, we'll discuss what makes it enjoyable, what makes it a work of art in the first place, what makes it universally relatable, and finally, we'll talk about what it could have done better. So, now that we have our format, what piece of narrative entertainment are we talking about today, Corrine?
Today we're going to be discussing the limited edition maxi series, Watchmen, which was written by Alan Moore with art by Dave Gibbons. It was released by DC Comics in 1986 and 1987, and then re-released as a single volume in 1987.
In an alternate 1985 America, costume superheroes are part of everyday life. When one of his former comrades is murdered, masked vigilante Rorschach uncovers a plot to kill and discredit all past and present superheroes. As he reconnects with his retired associates, only one of which has true powers, Rorschach glimpses a far-reaching conspiracy involving their shared past and catastrophic consequences for the world's future.
That's pretty good. That's creepy. Appropriately creepy. Appropriate. Thank you, Rorschach. And we will be talking about the movie as well by Zack Snyder, simply because that honestly was almost a shot-for-shot remake of it. And, of course, here at Fiction File, we like to cover all genres of fiction, and this is one of those great examples of where you have both a movie and a book. And actually, you would think that they're very similar because of it being almost a shot for shot, but it's actually quite different. So we'll discuss that.
Mm-hmm.
But talking about the critical opinion on that, that kind of comes into play. So IMDb, which is rating the movie, puts it at 7.6. Metacritic has the movie at 56. So quite low there. Critics have it on Rotten Tomatoes at 64%. Audience on Rotten Tomatoes has it at 71%. So that's the movie. However, looking at the comic, the graphic novel, or the maxi series, it's the only graphic novel on Time's 100 Greatest Novels, which is a 2005 list that they put together. And in 2008, Entertainment Weekly placed Watchmen at number 13 on its list of the best 50 novels printed in the last 25 years. And it actually described it as the greatest superhero story ever told and proof that comics are capable of smart, emotionally resonant narratives worthy of the label literature. So, quite a disparity there between the two mediums.
Yeah. I mean, it's for good reason, which we'll get into, but, you know.
Right. Yes, but interesting to note that at the outset there, and that's why we kind of go over this critical opinion, because it kind of sets the tone. Let's dive into our first topic then. Corrine, we're going to start with you. What do you think makes Watchmen enjoyable?
Well, I'm going to mostly be touching on the comic because I'm probably one of the few people that watched The Watchmen and then didn't watch it again. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was just, I mean, obviously it was a pretty faithful rendition of the comic with the exception of a few issues, but wasn't my favorite. But for me, like I said, talking pretty much about the comic, what makes it enjoyable is the level of details that went into the comic. There were a lot of recurring symbols that were scattered throughout the story, you know, mm-hmm. bringing a big synchronicity right. to one issue to the next. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the first time when Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons made it a point to repeat the various symbols and motifs according to the narrative. And then there were the supplemental documents that were adding to the backstory. And then I even like, you know, the little detail of the in-story comic called The Black Freighter that's being read. And with the 9-panel grid structure, you know, it's, yeah, it could, it did look a little bit like, well, this is kind of boring. You don't get the dynamic impact of the larger panels to the smaller panels, but it does make the story flow a lot better and easier to follow. It was just little details they thought of that, that they just put into the comic itself that I really enjoyed. Made it a lot easier to read and digest this really good story.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, good point about the 9 panels grid. It was, it's one of those things where it feels at first very restrictive, but then there's ways that they utilize it to where it's becomes the pacing.
Yeah.
And then they can use that pacing to their advantage. And so it's really quite clever. And the details, funny enough, I'll talk, I'm sure, at length at some point here in the podcast, of my opinions on Alan Moore and all of his eccentricities, which I love, all positive things. But Moore actually put so much detail into the script for it that in one panel he described was where the comedian had been thrown over the ledge by a shadowed figure, which, spoiler alert, we find out is Ozymandias later. But his back is all that we see.
Yeah.
And but Alan Moore wrote, we see his back and he's smiling. But yet you are going to see his face. He did not mean for him to like then draw his face smiling. He just somehow wanted the artist to know, Dave Gibbons to know, that he's the character smiling as he's watching the comedians bawling.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's like there's so much detail even that we don't see. Like they, you know, it's one of those, a lot of thought went into that. Yeah, definitely good points. So Dalton, what do you think makes Watchmen enjoyable?
Well, I'm not usually much of a comic guy. And I did, I'm going to talk a little bit about both of them.
Yeah, sure.
The comic enjoyable isn't really a word I would use to describe the feelings I get with this particular work in general. It's intriguing. It's engaging, but, it's hard to say that you enjoy something that's so dark and nihilistic. It's taken the word a little too far. The narrative is great. And I generally like dry humor and bleak outcomes, bad endings, and dark atmosphere. But this story was written by what I would call a mad genius. It's almost oppressive in the nature of its darkness. But that's what keeps you hooked as you're reading it. It's like watching a train wreck. You're watching all these lives like end or just get worse and worse until they end. And then, you know, there's like that glimmer of humanity at the end, you know? So, as far as the movie, besides it being very well produced in general, Rorschach is what makes that movie enjoyable for me. Jackie Earle Haley, he's such a fantastic actor, and he was the perfect Rorschach. I've admired his work for a long time. He's an incredible stunt guy too. So, yeah, that's what made it enjoyable for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do gotta say, yeah, from the movie, Jackie Earle Haley was the standout character. I mean, I might not have cast him if I was the casting director, but apparently that's a reason. There's a reason why I'm not a casting director, because he was the perfect Rorschach.
100%. Jason, if you're talking right now, we can't hear you.
Hello?
Yes. Hey.
All right, you're back.
He's been having trouble, like, he couldn't hear me in the beginning. We'll leave this in the outtakes. Where in the world is Jason Boyd?
Jason, Noel, and Boyd.
But yeah, like, when I got on, he couldn't, he had to, like, leave and come back, and I don't know if he can do that because we're recording, so
I don't know.
He's typing in the thing. Audio problems, headphones.
Okay. I feel like we need some Benny Hill music in here.
While he scrambles around. Okay. But that's when we need video so we can see the scramble.
Yes, yes, I'm back. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
You're fine. It's your turn.
Okay, I'll count myself in. Thank you. 3, 2, 1. Yeah, I think that the actually, the thing that makes it enjoyable to me is something that I think the movie kind of tonally got wrong. Which, I mean, Dalton's correct that it's not really, it's not enjoyable in the way that Ice Cream is enjoyable. And it's certainly not a fun movie, but there are moments of fun. There are moments of release that are actually enjoyable. I think, for instance, when, Night Owl, and, Spectra finally kind of like consummate the relationship once more. And then they like go out and fight bad guys a little bit, you know, and then kind of that's their kink almost. It's, you know, it's kind of creepy. But
hey, no kink shaming on this podcast, Jason.
Fair enough, fair enough. Hey, you know, I endorse it. But the it's enjoyable in the comic because the comic is it resists so much of superhero tropes and superhero scenes. You don't have a lot of superhero fight scenes in the comics, or at least they're not portrayed in a way that makes you feel like, hurrah, you know, the superheroes are fighting bad guys. And so there's this tension of like, this is a superhero comic, but everything's down and dirty and superheroes aren't even allowed to be superheroes. They have all these, you know, they have a law against them. But then there's kind of this released and burst of like, oh, this is what superhero comic book fun is supposed to be. Yeah, so it's kind of, and that's.
And I don't know when, I don't know the timeline between when this came out and when Civil War came out, but they kind of, I'm going to say that Civil War stole the whole idea of public versus private, superheroes from The Watchmen.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Even the comics like were long after The Watchmen. But the movie, it's the style that it's shot in that to me really ruined and let down the tone for Watchmen. That it tried to make everything this enjoyable, fun, glitzy superhero look. And the whole point was that it wasn't supposed to be that. It's the enjoyable parts are rare and few between.
Which is weird for Zack Snyder. You know?
Yeah.
Zack Snyder's supposed to be like the king of grunge.
Well, even with the grunge though, where it's like it seems like he's trying to make it gritty, it's still sexy. You know, it's not gritty like dirty, like in the comic where it feels like you just want things to stop. You know, you're like, this is not good.
Turn the page, wash your hands.
Yeah, yeah. In the book, I mean, in the movie, it's kind of like, you know, dark porn. It's like,
well, I mean, a lot of that probably has to do with the studios wanting to produce a blockbuster movie that would sell. Yeah. Mm. I mean, Zack Snyder obviously loved this storyline,
And yeah. he did his best to recreate. We don't know how much of that is Zack Snyder's signature action scenes, glitz and glam, and the movie studios. You know how Warner Brothers is.
That's fair. Yeah, either way, it's kind of a clash in tone, I think, that makes the movie less enjoyable to me because you don't have a tension and release, at least, you know. Mm-hmm. But
correct.
Let's. I think we all agree that Watchmen isn't exactly enjoyable, which is fine. I mean, it doesn't have to be. Not every one of these topics doesn't have to check the mark, but there are some moments in the book, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what makes Watchmen a work of art is our next topic. I'll go ahead and continue on this one. To me, it's really just the metaphor, the pathos, all the substance that you expect in literature. Mm-hmm. That is in this that you don't normally see in comics. I mean, Tales of the Black Freighter, for instance.
Good Lord.
Crane, you mentioned that. that's something that's missing from the movie. Mm-hmm. That's I think they put it in, you know, some director cut stuff. But the Tales of the Black Freighter is basically just a huge metaphor for what's going on inside the comic.
Yep.
And itself is done in an old comic book style from before superhero comics were a thing.
Yeah,
that had like pirate comic books. You know?
Yeah, when we have Tales of the Black Freighter, we often have the man from the newsstand at the same time, and mm-hmm. in this instance, they both act as the Greek chorus.
Yes,
and the newsstand man is like the old school Greek chorus, where he's talking about what's going on in real life, while the kid with the comic book, the Black Freighter, is the new school Greek chorus, where he is explaining what's going on in metaphor.
Ah, very good. I like that. Okay, very, very insightful. Yeah, yeah, that's perfect. And I mean, that right there just speaks to how intelligent and sophisticated the storytelling is mm-hmm. in this. And it just happens to have superheroes. It's really like a magnum opus. It's a work of literature that is almost commenting on superheroes. It's metacritical. It just has all of these layers. And that's, to me, that's why
like
it's
ogres.
One of the best novels. Yeah. But that's why it's one of the best novels of all time, even, you know, amongst text-only novels.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Kareen, what do you think makes Watchmen a work of art?
Well, I'm just going to say something real quick. Dalton, you're never going to lose the professor title if you stop. If you don't stop being Professor Dalton.
Yeah, if you don't stop referencing the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good, though. But that was great. I didn't really think of it that way. That's perfect.
Well, to me, what makes Watchmen a work of art is you got to look at it. It was never meant to be like a regular superhero comic book. I mean, at the time it was published, you know, superheroes in the comics were focused on, you know, good guy triumphing over evil. Well, they still kind of are like that. But when Watchmen came out, it blew people away with the depth of the storytelling and the characters. It was a shock because it showed us another way comics could be. Mm-hmm. Alan Moore used the story as a means to reflect contemporary anxieties and to deconstruct and satirize the superhero concept. This comic wasn't about superheroes and superpowers, and it lets you know that right from the get-go. And if you look at what stories and the way comics have changed since this was released, you can really tell that it did change the game. And that is just to take a comic that's just, you know, 12 issues, that's all it was ever going to be, and then just have such an impact on the comic world, the literary world, you know, years later, that is a work of art, literally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's visual art as well. Yeah. Dalton, what would you say makes Watchmen a work of art?
Well, I think that the work as a whole is a painting of the human condition as seen through the eyes of someone who simultaneously despised humanity and saw a glimmer of hope in it. It's a subversion not only of the superhero genre, but of the ideas it typically conveys. It doesn't tell you what to think. Like, comics of the age were talking about, you know, good guys and bad guys, triumph over evil, as Corrine said. But this doesn't tell you who is the good guy and who is the bad guy, per se. It gives the reader all of the pieces to put together for themselves and mm-hmm. interpret as they want to. There is no hero in this story. There is no villain. There are only motivations. And the way that the reader interprets it, it makes it what it is. It's a Rorschach test. Mm-hmm. I mean, even one of the big symbols in the comic was the man-woman silhouette. And Rorschach says when he sees it for the first time, it's probably depicting some sexual act. Yet when right. I, the reader, saw the silhouette, I saw it as a hug and a genuine connection. Mm-hmm. And I found myself disagreeing with that character, but also understanding him better because I realized that his life experiences shaped what he saw in the muddy black image.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a work of art because it's the first time in a superhero comic that we're left to figure out the ending for ourselves.
Yeah, and that. That ending, I mean, that is, we'll get to that probably at some point, but that ending is a great microcosm of what you're describing with mm-hmm. it being a Rorschach test. It's really, everyone's going to see that differently.
Yes, and it's part of the reason, I mean, there are many reasons the movie fell short. And a lot of it was probably because of studio interference, as Corrine was talking about. But the ending and the events that lead up to the ending in the comic were completely destroyed by the movie. Yes. And it's like nothing else makes sense if you take mm-hmm. the ending away. Mm-hmm. That's the reason the movie was so divisive, I think.
Yes, honestly, I was kind of almost with the movie until the end. And mm-hmm. then I was like, because, you know, they missed so many things that would have made the ending even better because, you know, we would know the newspaper guy and all that stuff, but, and feel sad when, you know, he ultimately dies. Mm-hmm. But we still would have been able to go, well, it's an adaptation and the comic still exists on its own plane, but you know, we know that that's happening in the world and you know, yada yada yada. Yeah. But no, it just kind of rips and goes, nah, that's not exactly how it happens.
Well,
also, to be fair to Zack Snyder, I don't want to sound like a Zack Snyder apologist, even though I do. I mean, when Alan Moore set out to write The Watchmen, his goal was to make a comic that could literally never be made into a film.
Right.
So, I mean, kind of had, you know, everything working against him.
Right. Yeah, and Alan Moore honestly does not ever want any of his stuff to be adapted.
No.
But yet he always allows it to be because he's like, well, there's money.
Yeah,
like, it's not money.
I think his goal is to eventually just come up with something that is like divisive that like it's great, everyone loves it in the comic, but then they just gotta admit, like, no, that'd be a horrible film.
Right. Yeah, he just makes his comics worse and worse. it's on like purpose. He was like, oh, I'm gonna write this comic book about Jack the Ripper, and no one would ever want to make that into a movie. And then they make one starring Johnny Depp. So, what?
Alan Moore.
But let's move on to our next topic, because I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Along the way, what makes Watchmen universally relatable, Dalton?
Well, it's a story about people in all their glory, and it doesn't glorify anything. It's real life. It depicts what real people do, and probably what they would do in these exact situations. You know, they lie, they cheat, they steal, they commit murder, they perform gracious acts with hidden intentions. Looking at you, Night Owl. But they also look out for each other. They connect with one another. They try to survive by any means necessary. They show emotion. They break down. The strong become weak, and the weak become strong. It relates on so many levels to average people, and I think that was sort of the point. I think we lost Jason again.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, you lost me for just a minute. I came back. Okay.
Yay.
So I'll cut myself in. Is it my turn?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah.
Three, two, one. Yeah, no, I think it is definitely, it's almost about the everyman. And we get that with newspaper man and so forth. And he tries to become like a superhero with the helmet and everything. And to me, relatability is the goal of this work of art. And it's to examine what makes superheroes tick. What would drive an ordinary person to become one? And then on the converse, what if someone actually had superpowers like Superman or Dr. Manhattan? Instead of awe-inspiring, it's friggin' frightening. You know, it has tremendous power, and it's being used for war. Like, oh, you don't think we would have used superheroes in the Vietnam War?
You know? Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's like, you know, and so we see, you know, Dr. Manhattan, of course, zapping people. And it's almost like we're seeing the Superman story from the view of Lex Luthor, where it's like, you know, well, it is kind of scary that this guy's got all this power, right? Should us humans kind of like stop him?
Yeah, it's interesting because Manhattan is sort of the anti-Superman. Instead of trying to like integrate into society, he seems to realize more and more that he doesn't want to, and becomes more and more detached from society, less human.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what makes it the most frightening, because you look at Superman, he's all powerful, but that humanity is what basically keeps him from going, you know, batshit crazy and killing everyone. And we don't have any kind of guarantee that Dr. Manhattan's not going to do that.
Right. And I mean, the only thing we have to count on with Dr. Manhattan is that he'll be supremely rational. But
in blue.
Rationality to him might mean in blue. Yes. But rationality might mean to him, you know, there's the old kind of robot thought experiment of, if you gave a robot the solution of could you stop people from dying from the flu, and just give it that task of like, do whatever it takes to just stop people from dying of that flu. What's to stop that robot from killing all humans on Earth so that then no one's living and no one can die of the flu?
Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of like with Ultron and Thanos, you know, those are two extreme solutions to problems. And that's something could be rational. I mean, like, if there's not enough, you know, space in the universe, it's completely rational to say, like, okay, well, let's just make half the people not exist.
Right. Well, and that's what makes it human, and it's compassion, and you have that level of empathy.
Yeah.
And that's why it really is about an everyman situation, and it's almost says at the end that the real superheroes are those with the most humanity. And so you have the most powerful superhero with the least humanity, and he's essentially a villain at the end.
Yeah.
And so is Ozymandias, who's kind of this genius boy who's, you know, detached and can think of things, you know, quote unquote, rationally. So, yeah, it's definitely in it's in the camp of Captain Kirk rather than Dr. Spock, or Mr. Spock, or Dr. Bones. But Corrine, what do you think is what makes Watchmen universally relatable?
Well, at its core, Watchmen takes the simple idea of superheroes and their superpowers, and it forces us to examine why we're drawn to the idea. Like, what makes us drawn to the idea of, like, having superpowers or even just having a superhero protecting the city? It's a critique of the superhero genre and their related myths, and then it just breaks it all down. I mean, according to Watchmen, it's not superpowers that make someone a hero. It's the rigid moral code. I mean, you can take someone like Rorschach to other comic legends like Batman, Spider-Man, or Superman. And no matter what, those guys were going to try and save lives. But Rorschach is so jaded. He's seen the worst in life. And he has no problem just offing villains if that's going to make the world a better place in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the rest of the heroes, the so-called heroes in Watchmen, he's just broken. If he ever had any aspirations of the greater good, real life just stripped that away from him. Instead of the whole "with great power comes great responsibility" shtick we've heard 1,000 times, especially in the many times Spider-Man's been remade, Watchmen shows us the all too real fact about how personal responsibility seems to disappear in the face of that great power.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's an incredibly cerebral comic book that thinks about what it means to be a hero and a superhero. And I think everybody can relate to that. Everybody can relate to having, you know, some sort of power and, you know, having to decide, is your morality enough for you to use this for your own advantage or the way it's supposed to be done or for the good of everyone around you? I mean, I don't know of anyone who has, you know, superpowers, but I mean, even just little things like, you know, getting a promotion at work. Do you use it to your advantage to make things better for you? Do you do your job? Do you help your friends out? Or do you know what's best for the company?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Rorschach is one of those examples of where he's almost the nicest, best villain, not nicest, but the most clean villain at the end. You want to say like, well, he was kind of right. Right. I mean, he goes against Dr. Manhattan and everything.
Yeah.
But he is a heartless bastard.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's not perfect. He's an anti-hero like Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And he is jaded and everything else, and it kind of leaves us where the only real people that are untouched are the non-superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who don't even have great power, but yet they act with responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's really what at its Watchmen tells us in the end, it's those people that are the real superheroes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Exactly. Right.
So what could Watchmen have done better, both movie and book? Well, either one you like to talk about. Corrine, you want to start?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie could have been done a little bit better by, I think we talked about this as far as the violent scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, the comic didn't really have a lot of that. And what it did was just like very gritty, dirty. You wanted it over and done with, and it didn't like glorify it. Like, mm-hmm. That was done a lot in the movie. They glorified the violent scenes. I mean, don't get me wrong. They were beautifully choreographed, you know, and they looked kind of fun, but that was exactly the opposite of what the comic was going for. And I'm not going to talk about the ending because I know you guys have much more to say about it than I do, but I'm just going to say the ending could have been done better. But as far as the comic goes, I mean, I think there should have been a better balance between dialogue and art. I mean, you look at comics, they're the mixed medium between writing and illustration, but Alan Moore gave Watchmen a lot of heavy narrative. There was a lot of dialogue, which could detract from the pacing. I know we talked about earlier the 9-panel grid helped with the pacing, but when you had these large chunks of dialogue, it just, some panels just heavily oversaturated with speech, it did make it become a bit tedious, despite an engaging story. So I think there could have been a little bit more balance. I don't know if that could have been achieved by, you know, someone gagging Alan Moore or changing the style of the panels, but it was just a little, like, on the scales, you know, the dialogue part, you know, weighed more than the art.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to get through a lot of the times just because of how much dialogue there is. Like, and I'm the first one to admit I'm not a huge reader. I absorb most of my literary through through listening to other people. I would rather listen to lectures, and I would rather absorb that information in other ways. So when I was trying to tackle Watchmen, the amount of dialogue, the amount of words actually just got in the way for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the words, but I understand.
You love words.
That's the thing. I am a word nerd, but yet I can see that, you know, it's not going to be for everybody. And so you're definitely right that there is a lot of, I mean, it's a read heavy thing. There's not a whole lot of splash pages and, you know, big spreads with, you know, army against army and stuff. You know, it's a lot of just everything's about people interacting.
Yeah, it's one of the things that, like, I know Watchmen is considered like such a great comic, and a lot of people, when they're trying to introduce their friends to comics, they're like, oh, you got to read Watchmen. No, absolutely do not try to get some newbie to read Watchmen as foray into comics. They'll never pick up another one again.
Let them
get used to it.
I think you do that if it's a newbie who loves literature and thinks comic books are substandard.
Correct.
Yeah, maybe.
Because then you have the structure of the panel, so they won't go, well, which direction do I read it? Top to bottom, left to right? It's like, yeah, like everything else you've ever read in your life. But you know, they won't be hung up on any of that kind of stuff, and so, because it's got the structure, and then it's very read heavy, so they'll be comfortable. But yeah, if you have someone who's like, I don't get this visual, but it's not talking to me kind of thing, yeah, you need something with, you know, Jim Lee illustrating it.
So, hey, Jim Lee's brilliant.
No, he's great, but he's visual, you know. I mean, his drawing is fantastic. I read Hush. No, I read Batman Hush. What's that?
I just want to make sure you weren't talking bad about my boy Jim Lee.
No, I read Batman's Hush and barely like paid attention to any of the dialogue. I just looked at the pretty pictures. Dalton, what do you think it could have done better?
I'm not going to go into the movie too much. I feel like I've said my piece on that.
okay.
Especially because when you remove, like I said, when you change the ending and change the events that lead up to the ending, the rest of the story doesn't make sense. Like when I watched the movie first, and I was like, oh, okay, I can kind of get motivations, but then when I read the comic, I was like, oh my God, this makes so much more sense. So I'm not going to go too much into it, but, as far as the comic, it's not so much what I think the Watchmen could have done better, because I feel like it executed exactly what it meant to in the way that it meant to do it. And the fact that it has endured as long as it has is a testament to the craftsmanship. But for me, it was too successful, and it created a singularity that I like to call the leak of ink. You picture comics of that period behind the Watchmen. They're full of vibrance, color, battles between good and evil, and moral guidance. The leak of ink began to slowly darken those colors. slowly blurred the lines until we got to a point in comics now where if your comic isn't dark, violent, or full of gray moral quandaries, it's not considered effective or relevant. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally playing devil's advocate here because, like, I like those things. I like dark, gritty stuff. Mm-hmm. But I can also see that it's a problem that doesn't really have an answer until someone puts out an anti-Watchmen comic, until someone comes back with the vibrant, like, super exuberant style, mm-hmm. and still is able to make it into literature, which is hard.
Yeah.
Which would be harder, I actually think.
That's true. Yeah, that would be quite the challenge. And I think, honestly, part of the problem of the leak of ink is the fact that I think people so often misunderstand what makes something, and I say misunderstand, but to them, what makes something good is not necessarily what that person set out to do. So they'll go, well, you know, Watchmen is really dark and it has really anti-hero heroes and they're all kind of shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write a comic with shades of gray. And they don't like think of, well, that wasn't the point, wasn't just to talk about superheroes of shades of gray. It was to talk about, you know, these overarching themes of power and, you know, this and that and the other. And to do that, it creates these things of gray, you know, and right. It's just people. It's when you make a copy of a copy, the quality gets degraded.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like you find that out with Xerox, right? So it's the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of leaked into not just comics but movies now too.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like I think a movie that did it right was Logan. Logan is my favorite X-Men movie because of the way that it pulls a Watchmen and is able to examine outward issues internally, and do it in a way that's grounded and still fantastical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. 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 You know, so for me, what I think Watchmen could have done better is, honestly, it's mainly on the movie.
Yeah.
I kind of just think it should even have been made into a movie. I think it was one of those things where, or a TV show, where it's a comic book that's about comic books, and it's meta-textual to begin with, and it's one of these great works of literature that exist in its form, and uses its form to enhance the literary qualities.
Mm-hmm.
So taking it out of its form and adapting it, you're now making just a different entity. You're right. Not making a better version or a more lively version. You're basically starting over now because it's not metatextual at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, Alan Moore is basically just always telling people not to adapt his stuff, but yet then still cashing the checks. I don't blame him because he's like, you know, he's like, I think people see it as a different thing. And honestly, he's like, he always comes out and is just like, I don't endorse this movie. I have nothing to do with it.
I just endorse this check.
What's that?
I just endorse this check.
But the, he is a mad genius, mm-hmm. and he is an occultist, but like a cynical mm-hmm. occultist. He has a ring on every one of his fingers. He has a giant swampy beard. He regularly does.
I believe he's a pagan anarchist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a documentary that's great. That's really just an hour and a half of him talking. And he talks like this. And he talks, but I can't do a British accent very well. But he's just, it's very deep. And he's talking about how he does witchcraft. And when he does his meditation and enters the fifth realm. And it's like, you know, and he does this where he like takes hallucinogens and like fakes some stuff. His stuff is crazy and it's mad, but it's so intricate because he's basically living inside his head and with his words. Mm-hmm. And it's not stuff where it's just like, yeah, you know, I got this cool idea. You know, it could be a movie, it could be a comic book, it could be anything. It's like it has so many layers that it's hard to break it apart like a puzzle and make something else out of it. So just really the what it could have done better is not to be a movie, stay a comic book. And then the comic book might have flaws, but it is what it is.
Yeah. You know, based on your description, I had to go look up a picture of Alan Moore, and he absolutely looks like Rasputin. That's all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that's a compliment to him. He just has this scary wizard look to him.
Scary wizard.
But yet he was like a high school dropout, you know? He's like, he was a rebel and a renegade. He's a hippie, but yet also like, he's so many things. And he's a very unique person. And he should not be messed with, because he's a treasure. But let's move on to our final thoughts about Watchmen. So I'll go ahead and just wrap this up from my end. It's personally one of those stories I look back on as my foundational courage to write my own speculative fiction. So I'm an aspiring writer. I've written a novel, really two novels, but none published. I've written some short stories. But when I hadn't read anything literary like Watchmen in comic books, I was still a huge comic book fan. I had, you know, weekly subscriptions. I'd have a comic book every week to pick up. But I was also a fan of literature. And I thought if I want to be a writer, I have to choose between this path of academia and, you know, studying in Paris and, you know, like reading F. Scott Fitzgerald and thinking deep thoughts. Yes. And or, you know, hanging out with like geeky, nerdy people and
rent a cabin in the woods.
Right. And, you know, yeah, that's the other, that's the path I was thinking I might have to go down. But, you know, it's Watchmen taught me that, oh, wait, no, you can do this. You know, you can combine things. You can make something that's meaningful and speaks to, I mean, they say literature, the thing that separates literature from pop lit is the focus on character. Mm-hmm. And in that is the focus on the emotional life of the character and vis-a-vis the human condition.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I think it was either Faulkner or Hemingway who said that, you know, great literature is the human heart at conflict with itself. Mm-hmm. And right. So many times in comic books, you don't have the human heart in conflict with itself because it is very black and white. And that might be one of the reasons why he had to make it gray. But you have just Superman and there's no questions or thoughts of what he should do. He just knows what's right. You know, everything's good. But this is real people struggling with what to do. Mm-hmm. And it just made me go, you know, you can do this. You can do both of this. So to me, it's a very personal story to me because it was something that kind of unlocked a Gordian knot, strangely enough, with the Ozymandias story. It kind of turns into that. But it made me think, you know what? There's a third way. You don't actually have to choose one of these two distinct things. And I, you know, critics back me up on this. You know, it's one of the best novels of all time, mm-hmm. and so on. And I just think that everyone needs to read it eventually. But yes, don't read it as the start to comic books. And go read more Alan Moore afterwards. Honestly, mm-hmm. he's one yeah. of the best. He's my favorite comic book writer, and I love all of his comics. And strangely enough, there are some semi-bright-eyed stories, like Halo Jones is a little bit more bright-eyed. But, you know, he does have some levels where it's not all dark, but a lot of dark.
But speaking of dark, go read The Killing Joke next, too.
Killing Joke, yeah. Killing Joke's great. From Hell is... It basically will make you feel like you just went to a witch's cabal or something. Like you just went to some weird meeting you shouldn't have attended. That's great if you want the dark, dark. Mm-hmm. But Kareem, what are your final thoughts about Watchmen?
Well, my final thoughts is you would identify with Ozymandias.
Except for my physique, but yes, everything else.
Honestly, you know, the only reason I even read Watchmen is because a friend of mine just shoved his copy of the graphic novel at me and told me to read it. Now, this was, I can't remember if it was before the movie came out or right after the movie came out, but it's been a few years. So he shoved it at me. I read it. And I'm really glad I did. I mean, I talked about earlier how just like cerebral the story is, but it's really just thought provoking and compelling. And it's unlike any other comic storyline. I think it was Dalton that mentioned earlier, talking about Civil War and how, mm-hmm. you know, it kind of cribbed off in this. I mean, you're right. Civil War was released in, I think, 2006. So yeah, okay. You know, Watchmen did it first, but yeah. It's considered, Watchmen's considered the moment comic books grew up. I mean, it routinely makes lists like the comic books you need to read before you die, and it's even called the Citizen Kane of comic books. And it's a fantastic story that if you're a comics fan, you need to read it. I mean, I think we all can agree that, you know, obviously don't make it your first foray into comics, but if you're well-versed and you haven't read it, well, you're not really well-versed in comics then. And... just for the record, I kept my friend's copy of the graphic novel.
Oh, good. I think stealing adds a nice bit of...
Is it stealing if he brought it over to my house, left it on my coffee table, and said, read this, and never asked for it back?
You know, I suppose not. You're right. There was a Rorschach test for this.
My gray morality there.
Yes.
It's the one book that should have some, you know, shades of gray when it comes to who's the ownership of it.
Yeah,
I've had it for almost 10 years now. So
nice.
You know, it's mine.
That's great. All right, so Dalton, what do you think are your final thoughts about Watchmen?
Well, I watched the movie adaptation when it came out in 2009, and I enjoyed it. I didn't think too much about it, especially when all my friends who had read the book said it was garbage comparatively. And since then, I hadn't really thought about it much until recently. As recent as, hey, we're doing Watchmen for this podcast. And I was like, oh, man, I better read that then. So I only recently picked it up, but it's, you know, I found more connection to it now, possibly because I've gotten older and more jaded, more cynical since then. And I've been better able to understand the plight of these characters in my own way. And I don't really know what it says about me sometimes. Like, this is a work that encapsulates my favorite quotation from Nietzsche. Beware that when fighting monsters, you yourself do not become a monster. For when you gaze long into the abyss gazes also into you. Mm. And I believe that that is the central pillar of this story. Because all of these people are monsters fighting monsters. And when you read this comic, it's in fact reading you as well.
Yeah. No, that's great. Perfect. Absolutely. And, you know, what's funny is you found more connection the older you got. I think I read this when I was 12. So maybe that, like, speaks to that I was born old.
Yes. 100%.
But I do agree that it does work better as an older person because you... There's so much in life. I don't want to wax too poetic, but there's so much in life that you just kind of go, yeah, good, wrong, bad, evil, whatever. Really, I just want to like give this kid a hug before everyone dies, you know? Like, yeah. There's just that kind of like, you know, in the end, I just want, we're all humans and we're all like in this together. Let's just not fight and like let's just be friendly, you know, and let's just have some compassion for each other. And that moment there at the climax will just hit so much better if you have that emotional maturity. Yeah. And I've reread it over the years, and it proved that it does just get better with time. Mm-hmm. All right, so thank you, everybody. Let's see, where can we find you guys if we want to follow you, like Rorschach followed the trail? If we want to get in touch with you over social media and follow you, Corinne, where could we find you?
Make sure you don't hurt yourself with that reach there, Grandpa Boyd. You can find me on Facebook or Instagram at Nonlinear Girl. Or you can find me on Twitter at Nonlinear Girl with a 0 instead of an O.
Excellent. And Dalton, if we wanted to follow your heroic exploits, where could we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Sword_Gaijin or on Facebook at The Sword Gaijin Cosplay.
Very good. And if you want to study at the feet of Ozymandias himself, you may follow me at The Fiction File on Twitter, not to be confused with Fiction File Mag, M-A-G, which is the official Twitter. And you can find me on Instagram under Sage Hazard with 2 Z's. So, yes, all joking aside, thank you very much, Corinne. Thank you very much, Dalton. But now, before we close out, if I want to read the comic or watch the movie, maybe, you know, I recommend watching the movie after reading the comic so that you still want to read the comic. Corinne, where could I do that?
Well, the movie is included with your HBO or HBO Now subscription, or you can also rent it digitally from your favorite video store, like Google Play, iTunes, Vudu, any of those, they have it. I think it's starting at like $3.99 on most of them. The comic is available through Kindle or through the Comixology app, or you can just buy a physical copy through an online live. I'm going to start over.
Yeah, just count yourself in. That's good.
All right. 3, 2, 1. The comic is available for Kindle or Comixology, or you can buy a physical copy through online retailers like Amazon, which if you're going to do that, if you wouldn't mind stopping by fictionfile.com first, click on our Amazon banner, and then it just gives us a little referral fee. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but does help us to keep bringing you the content you love and more lessons from Professor Dalton.
Yeah.
Yeah, Professor Dalton's salary ain't cheap. These triple PhDs cost a lot. Well, thank you, Corinne. And
these hands.
These hands. Yeah. But thank you, guys. So I think that's it for this installment of the Fiction File podcast. I want to invite you, the listener, to fictionfile.com for more scintillating analysis like you heard today. And don't forget to rate us if you liked today's episode. And subscribe to make sure you don't miss the next episode. Until then, I want to thank you for spending a little story time with us today. And for Dalton McKay and Corinne Asbell, this is Jason Boyd and the Fiction File family wishing you a happily ever after.